and welcome to New in Events, a podcast from IBTM with me, Shanali Devereaux. This is your go-to podcast for fresh insights and practical takeaways, whether you are new to the meetings, incentive, conference and events sector or a seasoned professional. You'll hear from industry leaders, discover innovative solutions, explore evolving trends and get inspired to take your events to the next level. So let's get on with the show. Hi, everybody, and welcome to an episode that really touches upon one of the key issues in events, which is how do we make our events really accessible? I have two great interviews to bring you from the show floor of IBTM World in Barcelona 2024. First of all, I talked to Dr. Shani Danda, who is a multi-award-winning disability inclusion and accessibility consultant, broadcaster, and author. She is a bubble of energy and fire, and I loved talking to her about what the European Accessibility Act is and what it might mean for your organization, but also about her personal and frustrating experiences when she's been trying to navigate inaccessible events and what we can do as organisers to make a difference. We then go straight across to Baroness Tanny Gray Thompson, who is an icon of a woman, a Paralympian, Paralympic icon, campaigner, broadcaster, and now a parliamentarian, to hear her extraordinary views on the same subject. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the IBTM World Show Floor, where I have the huge privilege of speaking to Shani Danda. Now, Shani, I'm going to call her one of our own because she was an event manager for 10 years, and now she is absolutely leading the tour de force that is change in terms of accessibility in our industry. She is one of the UK's most influential disabled people, as named in 2023, and is also one of BBC 100's Women Laureate. She works with huge brands worldwide to make sure that accessibility is at the forefront of our discussions, or even just even in our discussions. I am delighted that Shani has joined me today to talk about her work and what is new in this arena. And is it really about what is new, or is it also about the progress we've made to date? Where would you start?
Well, it's a bit of both, but there is some new law coming in next year called the European Accessibility Act.
Okay, when is that coming in?
That's coming in June 2025.
June 2025.
And that is something really important that this industry does need to know about, so we should talk about that.
What is it, and how is it going to change things for us?
It's going to make the difference of businesses being able to legally trade in the EU or not, essentially, in a nutshell. And what the law is, it's going to mandate that businesses of a certain size and turnover, so there is criteria, you have to go and look whether you meet it or not, have to be digitally accessible. So what that means is any digital products that you've got in terms of your website, your apps, your event ticketing systems, anything that your customer or end user might be using, it has to be accessible and compliant. Now, we have something called WCAG, it's WCAG. Those are the Web Accessibility Guidelines. And the compliance that we have to get is level 2.1. So that is what the law is asking us to do.
Where can we find these guidelines?
So it's all online, it's all on the website. If you just Google WCAG or European Accessibility Act 2025. But what people need to do is they need to go away and they need to speak to people who own their digital products and talk about it with them. They need to know, do you know about this? And you need to audit your digital suite, whether that's your website, your apps and your softwares. You need to audit that to see what level of compliance it's currently at. And that will probably flag up some things and some areas of improvement, and you need to make those. And there's a couple of more things to note as well. This won't affect all businesses, but you should check if it does affect yours. And if it doesn't affect yours, it doesn't mean you're off the hook. You should still do it. You're missing out on customers and users. Secondly, let's say you are a business that has to do it in terms of compliance. Then think about, you're suddenly more accessible to a whole consumer base that you may have not been before. What's going to come after they've booked that ticket or they're coming to your event or your meeting or your experience? Is the physical accessibility going to be there? Is the information going to be there? And the first thing is, do your audit, do your compliance, get what you need to get done. but also keep continuing it as well. Don't just stop there. And if we only ever think about what do I have to do in terms of minimum compliance, we're never going to get into this space of best practice.
Absolutely. Especially in events management, where are we as an industry on that scale of I have to think about this to the other end, which is best practice?
I think we are somewhere between the start and the middle. I think it's hard to say the whole industry is like this, because there are of course some agencies and businesses that are really prioritizing it. I work with one agency, Raw B2B, where I am their head of inclusion and accessibility.
Great.
I don't know many other event agencies that have a head of accessibility, and they are the custodians of NADEX, which is the UK's largest exhibition for disabled people.
Amazing.
So that's amazing that they're prioritising accessibility, and that's probably what drove it. But that's now across all of their events, even like in waste management and technology and other sectors and industries. So change is happening. We just need more people to understand what we really mean when we talk about accessibility, because it has different meanings. And in this context, what we mean is accessibility is, so if someone lives with a health condition or an impairment, that they have an equivalent user experience as somebody who does not experience disability. So it shouldn't take a disabled person, it shouldn't take them more time, it shouldn't take them more effort or more energy to do the same thing as somebody who is non-disabled. And often when it comes to events, that isn't the case. I've got a personal example right now. Next month, I want to attend an event in Dubai. I emailed the event organisers over a month ago asking about accessibility because I couldn't find anything about it on the website. And I still haven't heard anything back.
Oh, that is a shame.
It's a shame and it's annoying. And as more time goes on, I'm just like, well, do I even want to give you my money anymore? You haven't even bothered to get back to me.
The silence is interesting. I often feel that as humans, we don't want to answer somebody until we've got an answer.
Mm.
And actually saying, I don't have the answer yet. Thank you very much for raising the issue.
Absolutely.
We will do everything we can. Can you tell us what you need? Might have been a better response that made you feel as a customer that they're there.
Absolutely. And one of the biggest barriers to accessibility is content. People not having access to information to even make a decision on whether they want to attend something, whether they want to go ahead and purchase something. That's my example. But if 30% of barriers are related to content, that is such an easy, quick fix. It's just about putting more information on your marketing and on your website.
Absolutely.
But again, it's always thinking about your customers. And in my 10 years of being an event manager, I never met another visibly disabled person. And I worked in-house, agency, freelance. I worked in different countries as well. So I do think there's a lot to be said for, as an industry, we need to hire many more disabled people.
Because we definitely do.
I have a short stature. I'm 3'10". I live in a world that isn't designed for me. I naturally have all the skill set to excel in the career of events. Figuring out how to reach my kitchen cupboards is the least of my worries. Think about how good of a problem solver that makes me.
Well, how good of a communicator you are as well.
Yeah, it teaches resilience, how to solve problems, what to do in a crisis. These are skills that we need a high quantity of in the events industry. It's this massive disconnect in the UK. There's over 1 million disabled people that can and want to work in the events industry, or in any industry. The more diverse your team is, the better business decisions you'll make.
Definitely.
The more profit you'll make, and the more productive you'll be. And are we going to bring these communities together?
If we can't even get them through the door,
exactly.
Metaphorically and physically. Really proud that when I was head of events for the British Heart Foundation, I hired their first wheelchair user. And he was absolutely fantastic part of my event team. Loved him. I don't know where he is now. So Liam, if you're out there, get in contact and say hi. But in hiring him, I realised that I hadn't seen people in wheelchairs in our industry. And I wonder if there are assumptions that it is an able-bodied industry, you
probably.
Know, because of the amount of walking around we have to do, because of the physicality of it. Problem solving really is the biggest skill set that we have, isn't it?
And also, wheelchair users are a minority in the disability community because 70% of disabled people have a non-visible condition. There are loads of people that probably do work in the industry, but it's not apparent that they have a health condition or an impairment, or perhaps they just don't want to share it, which is fine too.
Yes.
A lot of people ask me in any industry and in any sector, what are the biggest barriers to disability inclusion and accessibility? And it's 100% the assumptions that we make and not thinking that disabled people can be as productive as non-disabled people, which is ridiculous. We have to actually overcompensate.
This is a podcast, clearly, but when Charlie said that, I really wish you could have seen my face. It was all like, what? Not more capable? Like, equally as. So I'm really interested about how we start conversations about this. Now, you're obviously advocating right from the front.
Yeah.
You're highly visible. You're fighting the great fight, and I love that. We always need advocates to do that for us. Are the conversations that you're having now, do you feel there's progress being made in where we're going with it? How do people start those conversations if they feel that they're too far behind, that they haven't started yet, that they're too afraid to have them?
I want to start by saying this isn't about making people feel guilty, because you just don't know what you don't know. If you asked me to do something I didn't know, I'd feel the same. I'd like, oh God, where do I start with this? It's natural and it's okay, but leaning into that discomfort I think is a good thing, because it shows that you care and it shows that you just want to get it right. Because in whatever job we're doing, we all just want to do a good job. That does include accessibility. The way in which I would come at this from is, if you're currently not thinking about accessibility, or if we haven't considered it when it comes to events, we can't really consider our job as complete or successful. Everybody needs access, and that means different things to different people. Just as asking people's dietary requirements has become the norm, I do believe one day everybody asking people what their access requirements will become the norm.
Yeah. Is it not the norm?
No. And I'm a keynote speaker. I go to hundreds of events every year. I never really get asked what my access requirements are, and people know they're booking a disabled person as a speaker.
Wow.
So I often have to wear two hats. I'm not just the speaker, I'm also helping the organiser to make it accessible as well. But as I said, you just don't know what you don't know, and I think it needs to be taught. Like, I went to uni, I studied event management. There was nothing on how to make events accessible. So we need it from the very beginning. But also, we know there's loads of people in our industry that didn't study a qualification in events. People find their way into it in loads of beautiful ways. It's about, once you know what to do, teaching it. And actually we say, this is the norm, this is what's expected, and this is best practice. And a lot of people do ask me, what do I need to think about? I don't believe people wake up in the morning and think, today I'm going to exclude disabled people from my event.
Right.
I genuinely don't believe that. But actually what people need to understand is, our health conditions largely aren't the major reasons that we experience disability. We'd largely experience disability based on the bias that people have about us and about the barriers that we face. And these can be physical, cultural, attitudinal, societal. Yep. And again, that points to why I don't think there's probably enough disabled people in the industry.
The more there are, the more we would understand.
For sure.
And be able to have conversations without worrying about it. I do think people worry about having conversations. I don't think anybody wants to be exclusionary when they begin. It's just because if you are what is called able-bodied or neurotypical, I guess you don't even understand or know how to have a conversation with somebody who isn't.
I get that there's loads of fear there, and I think it comes from people not wanting to say the wrong thing or put their foot in it or to offend anybody. What you've got to understand, the fact that I have a short stature, it's the most mundane thing about me. Yes, it will affect how people perceive me. It's definitely affected how people judge my ability, definitely affected how people treat me. Isn't it wild that it's the most boring thing about me?
Yeah.
There's so many other things that make me a really interesting person.
Yeah.
And it's just also, I think, about intention. I can tell when someone is coming to me with really good intent. Maybe they just don't know what to say, and it's fine, and I'll help them. But the more we do it, the better we'll get at it.
Definitely.
It's a bit like a muscle. The more you flex it, the easier it is. So the more we avoid these things, the harder it is, the longer it's going to take for us to get there. And the more left behind we will be as a business, and the less competitive advantage you will have, because you're not actually leaning into accessibility. You're not selling it to your clients, and you're not helping them be compliant with the law either.
Every jurisdiction has different legislation on disability, or no legislation. And in different countries, it means different things. And acceptance in society can be quite different. So then when you're asking event organisers to think about disability, they come with their own perceptions of it, the country they're from, and then they're being asked to look at this global market. For me, it's trying to think about all that at the very beginning of whatever you're planning. So in the UK, I work in Parliament, I work in a building that's part of it's 1,000 years old. I mean, it wasn't designed for women, let alone for someone who's a wheelchair user. For a long time, women weren't allowed on the main floor because, you know, the world would melt, obviously, if we let women be involved in politics.
We'd all be set on fire.
Yeah, so I think until 1974, if you're a woman on the main floor, you had to wear a hat.
What, to disguise the fact that you were a woman?
Yes, or that... because it was deemed sort of inappropriate to be seen out without a hat. That's quite strange.
Hilarious.
The world is never going to be perfect, but it's just thinking about things. If you're looking about physical access, if you think about how you get in and out of buildings, hotels, you think about airports, whatever it is, if you make it better for disabled people, you make it better for everybody. Really surreal thought that's just coming. I was talking to my husband recently about trolley suitcases. The invention of the trolley suitcase was incredible, but it means we can all travel with way too much stuff. When you used to have to carry your things in a suitcase without wheels, you actually had to think about what you pack. Thinking about how people move their luggage around. It's all little things like that that make a massive difference. And whether for tourism or it's for conference organisers, disabled people are increasingly part of society. They're delegates, they're in companies, they're making decisions. They're making decisions about where they go and what they do for thousands of other people. So if you don't think about them, then you have the potential to exclude. And you say what it feels like to be excluded, then it's not great. I don't expect everything to be beautifully smooth paths wherever I go. But if you put in ramps and you don't have people with a positive attitude, then you don't feel part of it and you don't want to go back or you don't want to be involved. And then you're missing out on expertise. I've been very lucky. I've travelled the world. Some of the most interesting places I've been to is where there's maybe not great access, but people have wanted to include. I spent some time in South Africa a few years ago, and where I wanted to go wasn't terribly wheelchair accessible, but some lads walking past just saw that I was kind of looking for a way to where I wanted to go and we'll pick you up and carry you. And I was like, yeah, that's cool.
Is that cool though?
I made the choice that I was happy to have it done because where I wanted to go, I really wanted to see. I was okay with it. Not everyone might think that, but I've been carried up the Great Wall of China, which was not probably the easiest for the people doing it, but it was amazing to actually go and sit on the Great Wall. That's something that's quite old. It's quite hard to put lifts and ramps in, but the people made it happen. And the fact there were people willing to do it meant that I had this amazing experience as opposed to, well, you can look at it from 2 miles away. You can fly halfway around the world, but you can't actually go and sit on it.
So we were talking about people offering to help you in situations where they might not be comfortable asking the question, is it okay to ask? How do we start these conversations?
I absolutely understand that there's that fear of offending or not understanding the situation. There are so many different impairments, but the question probably to ask is like, what do you need? How can I help? Not jumping in and deciding what help somebody needs, but just saying, how can I help you? Disabled people have quite a good idea of what they need and what the solution is, because we have to be quite good at solutions because you do it every day of the week, navigating the world that you live in. And that's where I think there's a huge difference of not making assumptions about what you can and can't do. Disabled people sometimes might have bad days and it's always difficult, but I think the worst thing is when someone jumps in and decides whether I can put my own rucksack on or whether I can push my chair. Or I mean, I've had moments where people have just decided to push me somewhere without asking me.
Oh my goodness me. Yeah. That is really in your personal space.
I mean, it's really quite strange. Sometimes somebody might need a bit of help crossing a road or pushing up a really steep ramp. So just ask, is it okay? Do you need a hand? And if they say no, then walk away. For the industry, it's about trying to make the best experience for people. So there's different ways to ask that question about how can I make your life easier? Because then people's experience will be better.
And that's a really beautiful question, I think, to start. How can I make your life easier? It's a really, really wonderful question. How did people make your life easier on your journey here? Because I know you campaign in aviation, so there would have been a flight to get to Barcelona. How was all of that for you? I bet you fly all the time, so every flight is a learning curve. But where are the barriers and enablers in those scenarios?
It's quite interesting. So it was announced about 10 days ago that I'm doing a piece of work for the government on aviation. So my trip here was great. A lot of airports are really good because the huge number of people they have, different age groups that unaccompany children, older people, they're a people industry. Every day they practice trying to get that right. And it's how you think about all those different things joined up. It's not just from the minute you get to the door of the airport till you leave the other end. It's how you get from home to the destination that you're going to end up at. And it's trying to join that. So, you know, there's lots of stuff I'm doing in the UK about integrated transport, public transport, buses, trains, planes, to make that as seamless as possible. Because you don't just suddenly arrive, you know, in airport. You need to think about all the other things. And the world is getting better. I still travel a reasonable amount. Hotels are better. There's more understanding in lots of places around the world about it's okay to be a disabled tourist or in work or whatever. So I always say that if you think about how someone with a visual impairment would navigate around the venue that we're here today, good signposting, different languages, and in a way of doing it without actually needing to write words down. Not everyone can read and write brilliantly. There's all those things that if you think about it from an impairment perspective, it just connects to people in a better way. I remember traveling when I was very young and trying to navigate all this world. And some of it was quite difficult. If you come at it from a perspective of someone who's a wheelchair user, someone who's visually impaired, someone who has hidden impairment or is autistic, you make it better for everybody. Why would you want to turn down business? I mean, right, that's the bottom line. I would love for everyone to care about disabled people because that's the right thing to care about. But actually, it is also about business and opening yourselves up to as much business as possible. In the UK, disabled people are 20% of the population. They have quite a significant disposable income if you take them in the entirety. And why wouldn't you want to access that?
Amazing. How many percent did you say?
20%.
20%. You see, that's one in five. We really ought to be thinking about this an awful lot more at the design phase of making our events happen. And by that, I don't just mean infrastructure. I mean experiences. All the things you were saying about signage, hugely, hugely significant. So where do we reach out to integrate?
Partly it's about having more disabled people working in the industry. I worked on the 2012 Olympics and Paralympics. And one of the things we were able to do, because I thought my job for most of it would be to sit there and say, and what about the Paralympics? And I never had to do that, which was amazing. Partly because from the top, chair, the chief exec, it was okay, we're going to have one look and feel to these two games. It is going to be brilliant for everyone. And not just brilliant for athletes, but brilliant for spectators, officials, tourists. But also within the committee, we employed a number of disabled people who could be that, okay, have you thought about this? Because when you get to know people, someone who's a wheelchair user, someone who's visually impaired with a guide dog, without a guide dog, you just automatically start thinking about things in a different way. And if you've never experienced it, why would you think about those things?
Sure.
That's really important. Go and talk to people. Ask advice. There's lots of different groups out there. There's individuals who can bring some of that lived experience. And I always find it really interesting is that I bump into lots of people in my day-to-day life who say they've never thought about wheelchair users until they became a parent and had a pram. Mm. And then suddenly you realise there aren't lifts, there aren't ramps.
In some cases, there aren't pavements.
Yes, or dropped curbs. You suddenly think about all these things from a different perspective. So I'd also say just never give up learning about the different people that make up this world. It is better than it used to be, but it's not quite as good as it needs to be.
One of the things you talked about on the stage was the power of collaboration. Do you want to talk a bit more about that?
Before my sports career, through my education, people make a difference. People saw potential in me that maybe others didn't. Having access to good education, then playing sport and having good coaches, training partners. Some of those people are still in my life, which is amazing. They watch the Parliament Channel, which is above and beyond anything you would ever ask a training partner to do. But it's about how you find solutions. And I grew up in a family which was very solution orientated. And as an athlete, you're constantly trying to be better and improve and be better next year than you were the year before. And that's about finding solutions. But I find it's much better when you have other people that share in giving you ideas to do the things that you need to do. And I don't have every single answer on what makes traveling okay for wheelchair users. I have my personal experience, but you can talk to other people and it's not kicking the can down the road. It's about, okay, tackling things head on. And it's amazing the power of people that you can come up with quite a lot of innovative solutions that don't have to cost loads of money, but can make people's experience better.
I absolutely love what you said about sport and how that influences how you feel about collaboration. Because you're absolutely right. There's a great structure in sport when it comes to coaching. Leadership coaching is something that's not relatively new to business, but certainly something that we're all trying to embrace to bring out the best in people. Yep. There's that element of teamwork. There's the element of the training, that constant improving of the baseline to make sure you're incrementally better than the day before. Yep. How much of this is lived values in you since you found sport?
It's a huge part of my life, because going from sport and then into politics, every day you can do something to try and change legislation and make it better or protect people or do things in a different way. So I think I'm very lucky having had that career in sport, because you can't miss a day of training because you can't catch it up. You can take maybe a day off work and do some extra emails the next day, but you can't do that in sport. And it's breaking it down into manageable chunks. And I think that's really important. And work-life balance is really important for people as well, which is sometimes quite hard. It's important we all think about what we can do to make it better for others. And when I first started traveling, you had to go to a travel agent to book a ticket, and they may or may not have expertise as an athlete when you're traveling with loads of equipment and all these different things. Now you can do stuff online, but every booking system is different. And it's how we can make all that easier with the power of technology. But ultimately, when you get to an airport, it's human interaction that makes a difference about how you check in, how you go through security, all those different things. That's why events like this are really important, because there's so much that you could do online, but it's those side conversations. As an athlete, it would be having a chat with a different coach over a coffee and learning something from them. In politics, it's a conversation you have in a corridor, which suddenly connects you to other people or gives you a different way of thinking. Events like this are really important because you see things in a different way.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that.
We do like social interaction mostly.
Yeah, definitely. You know? And so I think a lot of people will be heartened to be reminded of that, because I think we always worry in events that somehow the technology is going to take over, and it's not. It's there to enhance our experience and not necessarily replace where we are. We've got a couple of minutes left. I'd really love to ask you about advocacy. We had a big advocacy forum yesterday. It's becoming more and more important to the events industry in general to have a way for advocating for themselves. We're hugely significant to the economy. We feel that because we are an industry that has a wide supply chain and lots of different moving parts to it, it's very difficult for us to have a voice. And I just wondered if you had any top tips on how to really, really engage with Parliament in a useful, productive, efficient way.
When you go to Parliament, it's quite different between the Commons and the House of Lords in terms of what you're expected to do. So we go into the House of Lords as an expert in an area, and then you're told it's a bit like school. You're expected to learn about other areas as you go. MPs, members of Parliament, have to be huge generalists. They have to know a bit about everything. Just not enough is known about the industry and what you say about supply chain, about all the different moving parts. You might know a bit because you go on holiday or you go on work trips or you go to a conference, but you don't necessarily understand everything behind the scenes. At a conference, and I've worked on the other side in events management as well, so what you want is nobody to know that you exist, as an event, because that means it's all good, you know.
Exactly.
You know, it's only if things go really badly wrong do you get to meet the events team. Sport is probably, you know, a useful analogy, is that you're the athlete, you're the one winning medals, but you don't see the team behind you, the coaches, the training partners, the dietitians, the physios, the sports scientists, the team managers, the physios, you don't see all that. So I think it's about connecting and just reminding Parliament about the size and scale of what happens. And we talk a lot about environmental issues and sustainability, and those are really important, but human interaction is really important as well. So I think for me, it's about being kind of proud of what the industry does, talking about it more, because people, I just don't think, know enough about it.
Great. Thank you very much. Useful tips. We are very proud of our industry and we're very proud of you and the work that you're doing. And I love that it's overlapping with tourism and events, inextricably linked. And so everything you're doing with aviation is hugely appreciated. And thank you for being an advocate in that space. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
Thank you very much.
Really appreciate
it. Lovely. Thanks.
I love having conversations with strong and confident women, and they don't get stronger and more confident than Shani and Tani. What an incredible, incredible insight into the world of accessibility. And whether you're in events or whether you're in travel, we fundamentally just want to do what's right. Of course, we want the experience of someone who is living with a health condition or impairment to be exactly the same as somebody who doesn't experience disability. And we're not going to ever be perfect. Just as Tani said, we're never going to get it so the experiences are exactly the same. But the key is to not assume what people want, but genuinely to ask them. They both said, because of their condition, they know what they need and they're really good at solving problems. So next time, just ask. Don't carry somebody and don't assume they want to be carried when they don't. Just ask them what they need. And Tani came up with a great question, which is, how can I make your life easier? So when you're designing your events or your travel experiences, ask that question, how can I make your life easier? And if you want to be better informed, you could go straight to the EAA, the European Accessibility Act online, which also seeks to ensure equal access to digital products and services throughout Europe. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. I'll see you on the next one.
Hi everyone, Claudia Hall here, Exhibition Director for IBTM World. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast, New in Events. Your host for season two is Shanali Devereaux and executive producer is Mike Fletcher. Don't forget to mark your calendar for IBTM World in Barcelona, taking place from the 18th to 20th of November. And if you found this episode insightful, please share it with anyone else you think may appreciate it. Thanks again for listening. Until next time.